So the dollar's weak. The economy is clearly weaker than the headlines suggest. We're going to see an interest rate cut, and inflation, although it's not running away, is kind of stubbornly just moving up bit by bit. So I think the economic environment in the States is actually turning to the point where it's conducive for gold.
Adrian Day Asset Management. Good afternoon to you, my friend. Really good to see you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Andy, and great to see you again. Sorry we missed in Boca. I think we did say hello.
I believe you're right. And again, we were talking off camera about that. And not to promote his conference too much, but it's such a full conference, such a good conference. And it's just a stream of meeting great people there. And I understand getting lost in the shuffle. I totally get it. That all being said, to all my viewers and listeners, Adrian was on, I gave a talk there, was on a couple different panels, if I'm not mistaken. And the great Rob McEwen gave me some great feedback about Adrian's presentation. So I wanted to mention that to all my viewers and
That's
listeners.
very kind, Andy, and thank you, Rob.
No problem. So let's talk about this as our favorite subject, gold, and specifically the gold stocks. But let's start with gold first. Gold ripped really, so I would say, since January, but it's taken a breather here for the past 4 months or so, give or take a month. I'd say 4 or 5 months. We got an important Fed meeting coming up in September as well, and it looks like gold is breaking out. Tell me why, what your thoughts are on all of that, the strengths here, and really, do you see weakness going into the second half of the year? And I would say it's hard to see weakness with a Fed being as dovish as they are, coming out dovish, it seems.
No, interesting. There's a lot going on. I think you're, well, you are absolutely right. Of course, the gold has taken a bit of a breather. It's been kind of in a very narrow range for the last really 4 months since April. I guess one can look at that two ways, but one big important takeaway from that to me is that after such a dramatic move in gold over the last 12 months and over the last 3 years, the big takeaway to me is that we haven't seen a correction. Gold is incredibly resilient at this price. So we might be sort of, I don't mean complaining, we might be a little upset it hasn't broken out more, and it's down from the all-time high, whenever that was, middle of July. But I mean, it hasn't broken on the downside. Now, I'm not sure. I mean, so it's still flat, and I think, but the issue right now is that a rate cut in September is already in the market, right? So what's going to push gold significantly higher? What's going to make it break out? I mean, clearly, if the Fed is dovish in its commentary, and Jay Powell in his press conference is dovish, I don't think we're going to see that. On the contrary, I think we're going to see a cut, but Powell is going to be very adamant about inflation and so on, which could be disappointing to the market. We've certainly seen, central bank buying continues. It's down from the record levels of 2023 and early 2024, but it is still a very high level relative to any period before those record years. China is back in the market, as you know. I think it took a pause last fall, early winter. It's now been back in the market for the People's Bank of China is buying gold again for 7 months in a row. So, I mean, I think we're seeing continued steady buying from the most important buyers at the moment. What we're not seeing much of course, is what are called ordinary North American investors. Anyway, and that's reflected most in the gold stocks. So the gold stocks are up massively this year. Nobody could complain. Although gold bugs always complain, right? We got that Mac. It's never doing quite what it should. But, you know, when you look at the GDX is up over 60% this year, whatever, 65%, and the 67% as we talk. And a GDXJ, which is not really juniors, but the GDXJ is up 74%. It is staggering to me, but we're seeing that performance even when there are outflows from the GDX and GDXJ. Both right. outflows are continuing. You know, in early August, we did see some inflows, particularly into the GDX, the larger one. We did see some inflows. But for the month, we've still got 123 million of outflows for the month. And for the year to date, we've got $3.5 billion of outflows, net outflows from the GDX. Now, when you think that's a $17 billion ETF that has gone up over 60% this year, right? Meaning it started the year at whatever that is, my math's not too good, going backwards. $7 billion. That's an astonishing amount of outflows. GDXJ, same sort of thing. It's a much smaller fund, $6 billion fund. But it's lost $1.3 billion this year. And the fund's up 74% this year. So in January, it was only a $2.5 billion fund. And we've lost $1.3 billion this year. So to me, that's very, very significant, and I'll close on this, sorry. But to me, as a contrarian, that is incredibly bullish, because what it tells us is that the ordinary investor, not the gold specialist, not the hedge fund, not the family offices that follow it, not Bill Druckenmiller or other smart, you know, large smart investors, but the ordinary everyday investor, you know, the dentist in Oklahoma or the RIA, but is on the Schwab platform. They're not in the market yet. They're not in the market.
Yeah. Why? That's my question. And it is astonishing. But why is that happening?
I think that to me is a little more logical. I mean, to me, the big question is, why is the gold stocks going up so much?
Right.
And you still have the outflows. Who's buying? I've mentioned some of the people who are buying. Anyway, but why? I think there's a logical explanation for that. I mean, I think individual investors are missing the boat here, because the time to buy is when things are cheap, of course, undervalued. But typically, North Americans buy gold and gold stock, gold assets. They buy gold assets when the economic environment favors gold. That is, a weak economy, low interest rates going lower, high inflation going higher, on a weak dollar. Now, until recently, the only ones of those we had was a weak dollar. And even that's only relative. Yes, the dollar was down 11% in the first half, which is its largest first half decline since 1974. So, I mean, a really massive drop for the dollar. But look at it on a five-year chart. It's still high. And on a purchasing power parity, it's still relatively expensive, not as much as the Swiss franc, of course, but still relatively expensive. But the environment we saw for the last 2 years, let's say, was the opposite of that. It was just not conducive to gold investing. And the people that were buying gold were buying for reasons that didn't have much to do with the economy, you know, central banks buying to diversify assets and so on. Clearly, I think it's got to be clear to people now that the economy is slowing. You know, the bulls can look at bright spots, but to me, it's very, very clear, especially when you look at the labor market. We can talk about that if you want, but the labor market is clearly deteriorating rapidly. And I would say that the bottom half of the U.S. in terms of income are already in a recession and have been all year. But anyway, the economy is slowing. The dollar, contrary to my expectation, has not had any kind of bounce, really. I mean, it's up from the absolute lows at the end of June, but you know, at 98 on the index, it's still pretty much as low as it has been all year, other than, you know, July and August. So the dollar's weak. The economy is clearly weaker than the headlines suggest. We're going to see an interest rate cut. And inflation, although it's not running away, is kind of stubbornly just moving up bit by bit. So I think the economic environment in the States is actually turning to the point where it's conducive for gold. Now, the problem, of course, is that the S&P keeps going up. And if you're a regular investor and you get your statement, you know, in the mail or online, and you open it once a month, and it's up. Every month it's up. You don't think about anything else. You don't think about foreign stocks. You don't think about bonds. You shouldn't be thinking about bonds, but you don't think about bonds. And you suddenly don't think about gold stocks. You know, it's just, it's not that people are negative on gold stocks. It's just that they're not thinking about them because the market keeps going up.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you here. And there's still, and I want to get your opinion on this in a minute, there's still great value, even though the GDX and GDXJ has been up significant since January. But let me push on the Fed and the economy a little bit. You have a deteriorating economy here in the U.S. And I would argue over most of Europe, if not most of the U.S., or with maybe the exception of, well, I'd say really the world. And yet you have higher inflation creeping up. You have central banks that are willing to cut. It does seem like this is the perfect storm for gold. Correct me if I'm wrong and correct my analysis, if you would.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And as you mentioned, central banks around the world, the majority of central banks around the world that have had rate decisions in the last month or last 6 weeks, they have cut. The majority, not all of them, but the majority. And that's from, you know, Australia to I think Sweden held it. Yeah, I won't say Sweden because I think they held it flat. But anyway, a majority have around the world. You know, Powell, I'm a big critic of the Fed, as you know. And I agree with Ron Paul, I'd like to abolish the Fed. So I'm a big critic of the institution, and I'm a big critic of the policies that we've had ever since Alan Greenspan. I do think, however, if you look at where Powell is today, he really, we always say that, you know, that they're in the horns of the dilemma, and but never has that been so acute as it is right now. And Powell, as I read it, Powell is obviously concerned about his legacy. Everybody that knows him says that. And the legacy that he wants to avoid is being thought of as the other Arthur Burns. So inflation is always going to be a little more dominant for him than the economy, I think. And I think he understands the importance of keeping inflation in check. To say our target is 2% is ridiculous, because that's not no inflation. That's not stable prices when you have 2% deterioration a year, compounded, of course, and it never stays at 2%, but that's another subject. But he understands that if inflation gets out of control, then it hurts everybody. It hurts the whole economy. It hurts savers. It hurts workers. He understands that. I also think, frankly, that this constant barrage of criticism from President Trump, as well as, someone on his team, Navarro, had some, you know, pathetic comment, frankly, about Powell this morning, is only going to steal his resolve to focus on inflation, in my view. So what I think we're going to, and of course there's a big clash in the Fed right now. We had two dissents last month. That's the first time we've had two dissents, well, for a decade, I think, correct?
Yeah,
I think. Anyway, it's unusual to have two dissents. So we've clearly got a divided Fed. We've got some people who don't want any cuts in September. We've got some hawks and we've got others, you know, who want Bullard, not Bullard, sorry. Oh, what's his name? Came out this morning looking for a 100 basis point cut. So that will be 4 quarter point cuts this year.
Yeah.
But he wants to be the Fed chairman.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've got to divide it Fed. And I think Powell is, as I say, he's focused on inflation. I'm puzzled that the man last month would emphasize how solid the labor market is, because obviously he didn't have Friday's, you know, 2 days later, the jobs numbers came out with a huge revision. One assumes he didn't know that in advance when he made those comments. But even without, you know, the most recent jobs revision, the labor market is clearly deteriorating in so many ways. You know, the new claims are going inching up slowly, but more importantly, the continuing claims are, it's taking people longer and longer and longer to find a job. And so the continuing claims are moving up very, very significantly. I mean, normally you get a bit of a pickup in new claims, but you get people finding jobs. So the continuing claims don't move up more, but now the continuing claims are moving up meaningfully more than the new claims. There's so many things to look at in the labor market that would tell you, even without the benefit of last week's numbers, would tell you that the labor market was not solid. Yet he emphasized over and over again that the labor market was solid. Maybe that's just, I mean, if inflation is your number one objective, you have to think that the other side of your equation is still positive, right? Anyway, I rambled on too much about that, but I suspect that we will see whatever the statement says, because there is a conflict on the board or division. I think Powell in his press conference is going to sound reasonably hawkish. That's my sense. And that could be significant for gold, especially if it comes at the same time as a peace deal in Ukraine. As I've said before, I don't think, or geopolitical events, no, I don't think, geopolitical events tend not to have really significant, long-lasting impact on the gold price. That's not what drives the gold price, thank goodness, because I'd hate to think that the only time I did well was when people were dying. But having said that, if the market's been stable for a long time and it is overdue for a correction on any kind of rational basis, on any kind of technical basis, it's overdue for a correction. If you've got a peace in Ukraine at the same time that the Powell is hawkish, you know, that could see gold fall back.
Come back temporarily. Yeah, temporarily. Yeah. I've had several guests on, high profile guests similar to yourself, and we're all waiting for this correction, which so far hasn't happened. So it's a hard call, but I think you're right in the sense of if Powell comes out hawkish, that could be a trigger, if you would, for some selling and then value buy-in, if you would.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's going to last long. If we get a pullback, it's not going to last long because there is so much demand on the sidelines, so many people waiting to buy.
Yeah. Talk to me about, we were talking about how GDX and GDXJ has had such a good run up here since January. Looks like it's breaking out. Are you still seeing or finding some great value or some good value in some of the favorite stocks?
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that in your previous question. Absolutely. I agree completely. You know, let's look at value, not at price.
Yeah.
Oscar Wilde said there are people who know the price of everything and the value of nothing. So when the gold price moves up the way it has and costs move up at a much lower pace, as they have done even for 3 years, but particularly in the last year, costs have moved up much less significantly. That means that the margins are expanding. And as the margins are expanding, the cash flow and the free cash flow increases. And so if your margins and cash flow are increasing, at the same pace as the stock price is going up, your valuation on a, you know, cash flow and revenue and earnings basis remain the same. As the price of gold goes up, the value of your mines goes up, and the net asset value of the ounces in the ground goes up. And so the denominators of these metrics have all increased dramatically this year. So I would argue, there's no question that the gold stocks are not as undervalued today after this 65 to 75% run. They're not as undervalued today as they were at the beginning of the year, but the metrics are still significantly below the long-term averages of the gold stocks. And I'm talking about seniors here. You know, if you look at Agnico's price to cash flow, or you look at Barrick's price to NAV, significantly below the long-term average valuations. And we're talking now about the seniors. Go down to some of the intermediates, go down to the smaller companies. Yeah, that tremendous value.
About all that, we're talking about cash flows. I think you own the stock and I own the stock, and I'm not doing this name drop as a favor to this company, and I am an investor. It's Heliostar. I had Charles Funk on. Last time I had him on, it was maybe 6 weeks ago, and he made the comment, it's a great time to be producing gold because they're just printing cash, or no, I shouldn't say cash, but they're just printing money. They're taking in so much money if you're a producer at these levels.
Absolutely. No, and Charles has done, I admire Charles tremendously. He's done an absolutely first-class job with that company and getting the production up at the absolute minimal dilution possible. Because he could, of course, have just gone out and raised $25 million or $35 million. He had the investment bankers all offering him bold deals. But he's done a tremendous job at trying to limit the dilution as the company grows. And that's another one. It's still, when you look at what they're doing right now, but also when you look at the growth profile for the next 12, 18 months, that's a stock that's still very, very undervalued.
Yeah.
And I just pulled up, I know you said earlier, or when we were off camera, you said, you know, name names if you want, or maybe
please.
Beginning. I'm just pulling one up. I really like the company, number one, but I'm pulling it up as an example of just how cheap these stocks are. Fortuna has four mines on two continents. No particular, as it were, hairs on that dog. You know, their all-in sustaining cost was way up in the last quarter, but very clearly explained, because they were doing a lot of CapEx at two particular mines, and the CapEx was in their all-in sustaining costs. So if you look at them, you know, next year, the projection is for 1750 to start the year, 1750 all-in sustaining costs. But their cash costs at their mines are meaningfully under 1,000. Their biggest mine is like 750 an ounce. So what I'm saying is no hairs on that dog, and yet, is trading at less than 1.5 times book, is trading at 4 times cash flow and 8 times free cash flow. I mean, that's the kind of stock that Ben Graham would look at.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a cigar stock, but it's these are really good value.
Yeah. Great time to be a value investor. In the gold stocks. What else do you like? And you talk to more people than I do. What else do you like?
Well, I like companies across the whole spectrum, to be honest. I would definitely say for someone who is new to the space, don't forget the seniors. Don't forget a company like Agnico, which is still, you know, it's the gold standard. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to Amar Al-Jawandi at the conference, did you?
I didn't.
What a just a solid, solid man. Coming after, of course, Sean Boyd, who was the CEO for nearly four decades, I think, now the chairman or chairman emeritus, one of the two. But Amar has taken over now for a couple of years. Well, but what a great company. And again, no hairs on that dog. Good balance sheet, great minds, all operating well in good jurisdiction, great pipeline, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And again, trading at valuations that are meaningfully lower than its historical valuation. So what I'm saying to people is, if you're not in the market yet, or you're only in juniors, don't forget about companies like Agnico and there are others that are just really good value. I mean, if gold goes to 4,000, 5,000, you know, subject to all the SEC disclaimers that you can read on my website, you can be pretty sure that Agnico is going to go up and go up meaningfully. Then I'm also still buying the royalty companies. Now, those are stocks that Ben Graham would run away from. He wouldn't bend over to pick up those cigar stubs. But I'm not buying this week, I should say that. But last week I was buying Royal Gold, I was buying Franco. Not because they're so undervalued, but because they, and Wheaton in fact, because they are just such great companies that have such low downside, both as companies and as stocks, but primarily as companies, the downside is low. They're well diversified and they have meaningful growth ahead of them. We're buying, so some of the intermediates like Fortuna I mentioned, B2 Gold, I think could well be at an inflection point right now. I suspect once Goose Bay is clearly up and running, you know, smoothly, Goose Bay, the acquisition they made, has just started production, this year. I suspect we'll see another acquisition out of B2. Now, wow. You know, if history is a guide, depending on what it is, depending on what the market thinks about it, but we could well see a decline in the B2 gold price as the arbs come in. That would definitely be an opportunity to buy, but I like it here. I also like a lot of the junior royalties, Metalla, Elemental. I mean, I'm probably, you know, I hate naming names, not because I don't mind naming names, but because I'm always going to forget something. And someone says, why didn't you mention me? But, you know, really good, solid companies. Just look at Metalla, for example. Metalla has been in the doghouse for a few years, but if you're in charges, you could say it's formed a really nice long-term bottom. It is expensive on a cash flow basis. I know that, so no need to tell me. But on an asset basis, it's trading at maybe 70. It's gone up a lot, so it's maybe 70% of net asset value right now. It's got a huge growth profile. Not only, you know, well, this year, as TZ took us, however you say it, TZ is easier, in Brazil, as that mine continues to ramp up, and as their Endeavor mine, they get revenue from Endeavor. Endeavor's already started producing, but they haven't got any revenue yet, but they will get some in the third quarter. There's a delay in the revenue. So as their revenue goes up this year, but also next year, and then looking out 3, 4, and 7 and 10 years, they've got royalties on Gosselin, the extension to Côté. They've got royalties on Copper World, Hudbay's deposit in Arizona, where Hudbay just got a partner in to help fund it. They've got a royalty on Taca Taca, First Quantum's huge copper mine in Argentina. What's interesting to me about all of these mines, the ones that are 5, 7, 10 years out, in my view, Metalla is getting zero interest for, zero credit. I mean, zero credit in the market. But two things are happening. As we get closer, then a world-class copper mine that's going to be in production 4 years from now, begins to get some interest, begins to get some credit, whereas one that's 10 years away gets no credit. But in addition to that, all of their big royalties, Copper World, Taka Taka, what was the other one I mentioned? Akote, Gosselin, of course. All of those have other royalties that some of the majors own. So Franco, for example, just bought a huge royalty, 8% on Côté Gosselin. On the last conference call, Paul Brink, the CEO of Franco, spent a lot of time talking about Côté and how they're going to merge. The plan is for IAMGOLD to merge the two deposits into a super pit. That means that Gosselin will come on a little bit sooner. But he spent so much time talking about it and said, this is a deposit, this is a mine that has the potential to rival Canada's largest gold mines like Detour and Malartic.
Wow.
So what I'm saying is that Metalla is going to start getting attention when Paul Brink and Randy Smallwood and the others start talking about the assets where they both have royalties or streams. And that's going to start getting attention on a company like that. I'm giving these examples. I'm not trying to plug stocks, although every stock I mention, I like. And we not only would buy, not only do we own, of course we own anything I say I like. I wouldn't, you know, if I liked it, obviously we own it.
Right.
So we already own it, but these are all stocks. Every single one I've mentioned so far are stocks that we have bought in the last 7 days. So it's not, you know, it's not that I'm just talking about what we already own. I'm talking about stuff we are buying.
Yeah.
And then you go down, but I'm trying to give a little bit, so I'm not trying to, as it were, plug stocks per se, but I'm trying to explain why I think they're still cheap. And then you look, or undervalued, I should say. And then you look at some of the junior exploration stocks. Very tight. They've raised money. They're tight. They've got, they don't need to raise money in the near term. They've got multiple programs going. You know, company like Midland, for example, which I know I've mentioned before, hasn't done well for a long, long time. It's been a very disappointing stock for the last 2 years. But, you know, look at it afresh. Look at a company that has the prospect generator model in Quebec. It's got a very strong balance sheet. It could survive for, you know, years, a decade without raising any more money. It's got alliances with BHP, with RTZ, with Barrick, with Agnico, with Osisko. It's got they're not all alliances. It's got alliances or option earnings, joint ventures with all of the companies I just mentioned. Lots of money being spent on their ground. I will quote the number because I forget it now. I think it's something like $25 million this year is being spent on their ground. Some of it on their 100% owned ground. They've still got a lot of projects that they're bringing along or new joint ventures. So to me, a company like that has been very disappointing, no question. I think there's a fatigue that's come into the market because the story has been around for so long and they just haven't had that really big success. You know, whether you're a prospect generator or royalty company or a plain old traditional explorer, you've still got to have success, right? But I would argue, I would say that Midland is as well positioned for success as any exploration company I can think of. So that's an example. So, but there's a lot of them around.
Yeah. What's your favorite tier? I would say, and that's obviously to all my viewers and listeners, that's dependent on you and your risk tolerance. But what's your favorite tier? Do you like the seniors here? Do you like the juniors? Do you like royalty companies more? Do you like prospect generators, or are you just looking for deep value?
I would say probably mostly the latter. I'm just looking for the value with the growth, of course, or the potential, let's say the potential. But I'm buying across the spectrum, to be honest with you, Andy. And here's the thing. If what we said earlier is correct, namely, but the regular ordinary investor, as well as the investment advisors, are not yet in the gold market. When they come in, when the Fed cuts rates, if the Fed cuts rates twice this year, and the narrative changes, or we have QE starting. We haven't talked about that, but that's to me always a possibility. If the Treasury can't sell all of the bonds, all of the bills that they need to sell this year,
they'll start buying
the ball that the Fed comes in. When the narrative changes and investors are calling their broker saying, hey, I think we should have some gold, or the RIA saying, yeah, why don't we put 3% into gold? What's he going to buy? He's not going to buy Ajax expiration. He's going to buy either the GDX or he's going to buy Agnico, Barrick, Newmont. So I think the seniors still have a lot of room to move. A lot of room to move.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, Adrian, if people want to learn more about you, if they want to do business with you, how do they do that?
Yeah. The website is adrianday.com. And on there, we have information where you can either go and look at the newsletter. We have a weekly newsletter, and then or look at the money management. And as you know, we're individualized in the asset management. We do not just gold resource, which is what we're focusing on now, but we also have global accounts. Most of our accounts are global accounts, in fact. And we're very sort of, so they're individualized accounts and we're very flexible on minimums.
Yeah. Yes, you are. Adrian, it's been great talking to you. I'm really looking forward to getting you on again here soon, hopefully in the next couple of months, as we always do, just to talk a little bit in review, but also what we're seeing in the future moving forward. So I want to thank you so much for your time, Adrian.
Well, thank you, Andy, very much. I appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thank you.